Good morning. This is Eileen, and I'll be reading for you from the Herald and Review for Friday, August 26th. The first headline is, New Law Permits Decatur Women's Registered Nurse Application. And this is submitted by Teresa Churchill in Decatur. Lisa Creason spent more than a year stalking certain members of the General Assembly. With the Decatur woman every step of the way, was Amy Schneider, her caseworker at the Northeast Community Fund's Family Investment Program. Both women smile at the memory. The secretaries would sometimes like us and sometimes not, Creason said. If they didn't, we would just show up without an appointment. We would wait, Schneider added. Now, the wait is almost over for Creason, 43, who discovered after earning an associate degree in 2014, she was barred from taking the state exam to become a registered nurse because of an attempted robbery conviction 20 years earlier. On Thursday, Governor Bruce Rauner signed legislation allowing Creason and any other person convicted of a forcible felony, other than one requiring them to register as a sex offender, to petition to the Illinois Department of Public Health for health care worker licensure as of January 1. During the signing ceremony at Richland Community College, where Creason earned her degree, Rauner praised her work on behalf of Senate Bill 42, which helped lead to its passage by the Senate March 26, 2015, and the House on May 26, 2015. 16. This is Eileen returning with the Herald and Review today, Friday, August 26th. We will continue now with the death notices. John Charles Goodbrake of Decatur, 80 years old, passed away on Tuesday, August 26th, 2016, after a 19-year battle with leukemia. He was born on May 29th, 1936 in Decatur, the son of John R. and Virginia E. Rollinger Goodbrake. He married Betty R. West in Clinton on April 30, 1953. The funeral services to be held in for John's life will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, August 30, 2016, in the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home with Pastor Steve Cecil. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Monday, in the funeral home. Burial will be at Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Westside Church Nazarene, 788 North Sunnyside Road, Decatur, Illinois, 62522. Mary Jane Osborne of Forsyth, age 81, died August 19, 2016. Services will be 3 p.m. Saturday at the First Lutheran Church. Visitation will be 1 hour before in the church. Memorials may be made to the First Lutheran Church. Send condolences to www.gracelandfairlawn.com. The next article, Judge Orders Gill on Ballot as Independent. Springfield. A federal judge has ordered the Illinois State Board of Education to allow David Gill to appear on the November 8th ballot as an independent candidate in the 13th Congressional District. After collecting only 8,593 of the 10,754 valid petition signatures he needed to earn a ballot spot under the state law, Gill challenged the requirement in federal court. The Bloomington physician and former four-time Democratic congressional candidate argues that the requirement is unconstitutional because it's out of line with what's required of major party candidates for Congress and independent candidates seeking other offices. A group of voters from the 13th District joined in Gill in the lawsuit. While not ruling on the overall merits of the case, U.S. District Judge Sue Myerscough issued the order late Thursday morning, a day before the Elections Board is scheduled to certify the ballot, because Gill showed he would suffer irreparable harm if he was excluded and because the state failed to show a compelling reason for leaving him off. An otherwise qualified candidate suffers irreparable harm if he is wrongfully deprived of the opportunity to appear on the election ballot, Myerscough wrote in her 26-page opinion. Similarly, voters who would have voted for the candidate would also suffer irreparable harm. Gill said he wasn't sure what to expect after a Wednesday court hearing, but he was pleased with the ruling. I always thought that our case was extremely strong and was hoping that she would consider the many details that are associated with the case, such as this, said Gill, who last ran as a Democrat in 2012 against now U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican Taylorville. Gill was found to be short on signatures after Wicklund and former Macon County Republican Party Chair Jeffrey Stocks, challenged his petitions, waiving the way of the lawsuit. Spokeswoman Annie Thomas said the Illinois Attorney General's office is reviewing the judge's order and will decide quickly what the next step should be. Wicklund said he was disappointed with the ruling. He said he doesn't buy Gill's argument that the signature requirement is an insurmountable obstacle. This is a candidate that's run four times previous, Wicklund says. He knows how to circulate petitions to get signatures. Davis' campaign did not respond to a request for comment. Gill said he's weighing whether to continue pressing the lawsuit and vowed to campaign hard over the next coming weeks. The whole purpose of this was to win the election in November, he said. I wasn't pursuing this just to make a statement. The next article, Frerichs Fights for More Access to Death Penalties, by Ryan Voylis, Decatur. It was tough on Sherry Mayberry when her mother died. But 7 years earlier, Mayberry discovered her mother had a life insurance policy with thousands of dollars that had gone unclaimed. I had a cousin that was reading the newspaper, and the treasurer's office iCash program was in there, said Mayberry. So they called me and said, hey, I saw your name and there's money coming your way. You should check it out. Mayberry's story is one that has been heard a lot recently in Illinois Treasury Michael Frerichs as he was toured the state with the Task Force on Unclaimed Life Insurance Policies. It is meant to draw attention to the hundreds of millions of dollars of death benefits left unclaimed by families and how insurance companies have no prerogative to contact beneficiaries. Insurance companies say they cannot know when someone has died unless someone approaches them with a death certificate, Frerichs said. But we just know that's not true. Part of the task force purpose for visiting Richland Community College on Thursday morning was to raise awareness for the proposed Unclaimed Life Insurance Benefit Act. The proposal would require insurance companies to check a national Social Security database to determine whether policyholders have died and to make a good faith effort to locate their beneficiaries. The plan passed the General Assembly with minor opposition and is waiting action from Governor Bruce Rauner. A spokeswoman for Rauner said the bill is under review. Audits conducted by the Treasurer's Office have identified $550 million in death benefits, that were never paid to Illinois families over the past 5 years. Those audits only cover 20 of the nation's largest insurers that committed to doing so as part of the national settlement with state authorities. Frerichs said there could be hundreds of millions more at other companies that were not audited. There are about a dozen people at the start of Thursday's hearing, which was overseen by Frerichs and included representatives from the AARP, Citizen Action Illinois, State Rep Sue Scherer, Democrat of Decatur, and State Senator Sam McCain, Republican Plainville, with the later praising the hearings as a chance for residents to learn about this issue and present their stories. This is what open and honest government is all about, McCain said. Next article, Trump rebuks racism claims as Clinton warns of radicalism, from Manchester, New Hampshire. Donald Trump confronted head-on allegations that he is racist on Thursday, defending his hardline approach to immigration while trying to make the case to minority voters that Democrats have abandoned them. His general election opponent, Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, hammered the point that Trump unleashed the radical fringe within the Republican Party, including anti-Semites and white supremacists, dubbing the billionaire's businessman's campaign as one that will make America hate again. The ping-pong accusations come as the two candidates vie for minorities and any undecided voters with less than 3 months until Election Day. Weeks before the first early voting, Trump faces the urgent task of revamping his image to win over those skeptical of his candidacy. In a tweet shortly after Clinton wrapped up her speech in the swing state of Nevada, Trump said she is pandering to the worst instincts in our society. She should be ashamed of herself. Clinton is eager to capitalize on Trump's slipping poll numbers, particularly among moderate Republican women turned off by his controversial campaign. "Don't be fooled by Trump's efforts to rebrand," she told voters at a speech in Reno, saying the country faced a moment of reckoning. He's taking hate groups mainstream and helping a radical fringe take over one of America's two major political parties, she said. Trump tried to get ahead of the Democratic nominee, addressing a crowd in Manchester, New Hampshire, just minutes before Clinton. Hillary Clinton is going to try to accuse this campaign and millions of decent Americans who support this campaign of being racist, Trump predicted. To Hillary Clinton and her donors and advisors pushing her to spread her smears and her lies about decent people, "I have three words," he said. "I want you to hear these words and remember these words. Shame on you." Trump tried to turn the tables on Clinton, suggesting she was trying to distract from questions swirling around donations to the Clinton Foundation and her use of private email servers. "She lies, she smears, she paints decent Americans as racists," said Trump, who then defended some of the core and, to some people, divisive ideas of his candidacy. Clinton did not address any of the accusations about her family foundation in her remarks. Instead, she offered a strident denouncement of Trump's campaign, charging him with fostering hate and pushing discriminatory policies, like his proposed temporary ban on Muslims entering the United States. Her speech focused on the so-called alt-right movement, which is associated with efforts on the far right to preserve white identity, oppose multiculturalism, and defend Western values. Discussions about alt-right movement became the subject of a Twitter war Thursday, with people on both sides of the debate tweeting under the hashtag #AllRightMeans. "Alt-right means we don't want to kill you, we just want you to go away," tweeted one person. "Alt-right means white supremacy, that's all right is, another code word for white supremacy, nothing more than that," another tweet said. Clinton's campaign also released an online video that compiles footage of prominent white supremacist leaders praising Trump, who has been criticized for failing to immediately denounce the support he's garnered from white nationalists and supremacists, including former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard David Duke. Trump, who also met Thursday in New York with members from the Republican Party initiative meant to train young and largely minority volunteers, has been working to win over blacks and Latinos in light of his past inflammatory comments, and has been claiming that Democrats have taken minority voters' support for granted. "All allies over the past week, the Republican presidential nominee cast Democratic policies as harmful to communities of color, and in Mississippi on Wednesday he went so far as to label Clinton a bigot. They've been very disrespectful, and as far as I'm concerned, to the African-American population in this country," Trump said. Many black leaders and voters have dismissed Trump's message, delivered to predominantly white rally audiences, as condescending and intended more to measure undecided white voters that he's not racist than to actually help minority communities. Cornell William Brooks, president of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, told C-SPAN's newsmaker Thursday that Trump has not reached out to the organization for any reason. He added that Trump refused the group's invitation to speak at its convention. "We're going to make it clear. You don't get to the White House unless you travel through the doors of the NAACP, Brooks said. More importantly, you don't get to the White House without addressing the nation's civil rights agenda. Before the meeting in New York, several protesters unfurled a banner over the railing in the lobby of Trump Tower that read, "Trump equals always racist." They were quickly escorted out by security as they railed against Trump for trying to pander to black and Latino leaders. "Nothing will change," they yelled. This next article is "Aftershocks Rattle Italian Quake Zone, Toll Rises to 250. This is from Pescara del Tronto, Italy. As the search for survivors ground on, Premier Matteo Renzi pledged new money and measures Thursday to rebuild quake-devastated central Italy amid mounting soul-searching over why the seismic-prone country has continually failed to ensure its buildings can withstand such catastrophes. A day after the deadly quake killed 250 people, a 4.3 magnitude aftershock sent a plume of thick gray dust in the hard-hit town of Amatrice. The aftershock crumbled already cracked buildings, rattled residents, and closed already clogged roads. It was only one of the more than 470 tremblers that have followed Wednesday's pre-dawn quake. Firefighters and rescue crews using sniffer dogs worked in teams around the hard-hit area in central Italy, pulling chunks of cement, rock, and metal from mounds of rubble where homes once stood. Rescuers refused to say when their work would shift from saving lives to recovering bodies, noting that one person was pulled alive from the rubble 72 hours after the 2009 quake in the nearby town of La Aqua. "We will work relentlessly until the last person is found and make sure no one is trapped," said Lorenzo Botti, a rescue team spokesman. Worst affected by the quake were the tiny towns of Amatrice and Acquamole near Rieti, 100 kilometers, which is 60 miles northeast of Rome, and Pescara del Tronto, 25 kilometers, 15 miles further to the east. Many were left homeless by the scale of the destruction, their homes and apartments declared uninhabitable. Some survivors, escorted by firefighters, were allowed to go back inside homes briefly Thursday to get necessities for which will surely be extended absence. "Last night we slept in the car. Tonight I don't know," said Nello Caffino, as he carried his sister-in-law's belongings on his head after being allowed to go quickly into her house in Pescara del Tronto. "When she is more tranquil, we will go to Ascoli," he said. Caffini has a house in nearby Ascoli, but his sister-in-law was too terrified by the aftershocks. Charitable assistance began pouring into the earthquake zone in traffic-clogging droves Thursday. Church groups from a variety of Christian denominations, along with farmers offering donated peaches, pumpkins, and plums, sent vans along the one-way road to Amatrice that was already packed with emergency vehicles and trucks carrying sniffer dogs. Other assistance was spiritual. "When we learned that the hardest hit place was here, we spoke to our bishop and he encouraged us to come here to comfort the families of the victims," said the priest, who gave his name only as Father Marco, as he walked through Pescara del Tronto. "They have given us a beautiful example because their pain did not take away their dignity." Italy's Civil Protection Agency said the death toll has risen to 250 by Thursday afternoon, with more than 180 other fatalities in Amatrice. At least 365 others were hospitalized, and 215 people were pulled from the rubble alive since the quake struck. A Spaniard and 5 Romanians were among the dead, according to the government. There was no clear estimate of how people might be still missing, still in the rustic area and packed with summer vacationers. The Romanian government alone said 11 of its citizens were missing. As the search effort continued, the soul-searching began. Premier Renzi authorized a preliminary 50 million euros in emergency funding, and the government canceled taxes for residents, pro forma measures that are just the start of what will be a long and costly rebuilding campaign. He announced a new initiative, Italian Homes, to answer years of criticisms over shoddy construction across the country, which has the highest seismic hazard in Western Europe. But he also said that it was absurd to think that Italy could build completely quake-proof buildings. It's illusory to think you can control everything, he told a news conference. It's difficult to imagine. It could have been avoided simply using different building technology. We're talking about medieval era homes. The next article, Prison Group, TAM's closure not to blame for Pontiac fight. This is in Pontiac, submitted by Edith Brady Lunny. The recent altercation between inmates and staff at Pontiac Correctional Center that sent six correctional officers to the hospital is not linked to the 2013 closure of the state's Super Maximum facility, a Chicago-based prison watchdog group said Thursday. Jennifer Vollen Katz, executive director of the John Howard Association, took issue with comments from the union representing correctional officers, which claimed closure of TAM's correctional center has made the Pontiac facility more dangerous. To think that we need to reopen TAM is a mistake. There's nothing about TAM's that was positive, humane, or reform-minded, said Vollen Katz, adding that a large number of human rights violations were alleged prior to TAM's closure. The Pontiac prison was locked down after an incident Sunday involving five inmates that sent officers to the hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening. The Illinois Department of Corrections issued a statement Monday blaming the incident on a failure by staff to follow staff safety policies. In response, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees blamed the incident on the closure of TAMS, which housed inmates with histories of violent and or severe mental illness. AFSCME also argued that relaxed disciplinary measures implemented as part of the reforms in mental health care in all state prisons has put staff at risk. Joel Lewis, president of the AFSCME Local 494, accused Governor Bruce Rauner's administration of putting mental health care above the safety of all inmates and staff. Many of the assaults are not being prosecuted as the inmates are considered SMI, or seriously mentally ill, so they are not held accountable for their actions, yet they will soon be on the streets, Lewis said. The efforts to improve how the 11,000 inmates statewide who have some form of mental illness are treated are spelled out in settlement agreements in a class action lawsuit resolved in January. The state agreed to sweeping change that will provide counseling services and four residential treatment units for seriously mentally ill prisoners who have spent years in segregation, in some cases without proper care. Alan Mills, one of the lawyers for the inmates in the lawsuit, took exception to Lewis's characterization of inmates as the nightmares that are no longer on the streets. They're not nightmares, they're people, Mills said. One of the recent violent encounters at the prison involved a mentally ill inmate transferred to Pontiac after the closure of TAMS in southern Illinois, said Mills. The prisoner fought with officers as he was being removed from his segregation cell. He needs mental health care, not being locked up in a cell 24 hours a day, said Mills. Mills' executive director of Uptown's People's Law Center in Chicago acknowledged that correctional officers have worked without a contract for more than years in prison. They are overcrowded and understaffed. But blaming mental health care for the recent problem is not the answer, he said. The next article, Mount Zion Hopelessly Devoted to Greece Fest, by Ryan Boylis. Mount Zion. After hundreds came to the Fletcher Park last year, Kelly McCourt Edwards realized that Grease Fest is the word on the lips of most residents. As students prepare to head back to school, the village and the Mount Zion Convention Center are giving them one last taste of summer with the second Grease Fest Back to School Bash that begins at 6 p.m. on Saturday night at Fletcher Park. Grease itself has become an icon. It's a movie about kids kicking off their school year and saying goodbye to the summer, said Edwards, the village's event coordinator. It's the perfect movie to show this time of year. While Fletcher Park has hosted movies throughout the year, Grease Fest will be more than just a showing of the iconic 1978 musical starring John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. Like last year, events include face painting, games, a costume contest, and a number of vintage vehicles to celebrate the 1950s era of a movie. There will also be hula hoop contests and performances by the Johns Hills and Mount Zion Junior High show choirs, Mount Zion's Palms, cheerleaders, and drumline. The football team will also lead attendees to their own Rydell High bonfire before the movie begins at dusk. University dogs will be on hand with food, while the Mount Zion band booster will provide snow cones, popcorn, and sweets. Edwards said she was hopeful they would get around 50 to 100 people to attend the inaugural event last year. More than that, when more than double showed up to Fletcher Park on the movie summer night, Edwards knew that the tradition was in the making. Though Grease debuted nearly 40 years ago, its lasting legacy can be felt by the regular television airing and in modern musicals. Grease has become a favorite of our grandparents, our parents, and down to our kids, she said. They are just those movies that become traditions in our families, and I think Grease is one of those. This is from the mailbag. Food Bank offers four-star aid to the area. The days of summer are now at their height. While school bells will be ringing before long, it continues to be a fun time of year. Sadly, though, the days of summer aren't all fun for all. Literally thousands who are food insecure in central Illinois wonder where their next meal will come from. Most at risk are children who don't have access to the meals offered through school nutrition programs. The summertime needs for these youngsters compounds the difficulties hunger presents for the literally thousands of Macon County residents year-round. Feeding America, the Central Illinois Food Bank's national food distribution partner, reports that 17,900 Macon County residents are food insecure. Fortunately, the people of Central Illinois are very generous in their support of local food services agencies and Central Illinois Food Bank, which provides food to 17 Macon County hunger relief organizations. Last year, we furnished these local organizations with food for more than 1.1 million meals. There are opportunities for all to help eliminate hunger. Support local food drives and hunger relief programs. Continue your generous support for the Illinois Central Food Bank with a donation to P.O. Box 8228, 1937 East Cook Road Street in Springfield, Illinois 62791. The value of contributions to the Central Illinois Food Bank was recently validated when the Charity Navigator rated Central Illinois Food Bank as one of only 50 charities nationwide to earn a 4-star rating with a perfect 100 score. It's our 7th consecutive 4-star rating. Our pledge to honor throughout our 21 county region is to continue to serve as trustworthy stewards of your generous giving. This has been Eileen reading the Herald and Review, Friday, August 26th. Have a good day. Thank you for listening. Industry officials say that they can merge seamlessly and travel in long, closely packed caravans at higher speed. That would improve traffic flow and increase highway capacity. Cars will also communicate with traffic signals to make intersections more efficient. We will now take a short break and return for the second half hour of the Herald and Review. Thank you for listening.